Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Joining us this evening is renowned conservator John McElhone, recently retired from the position of Chief Conservator of Photography at the National Gallery of Canada in Ottawa. John received his Bachelor of Science from McGill University in Montreal, a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Photography from Concordia University, a Master's of Art Conservation from Queen's University in Kingston, and he was then granted a fellowship at the Public Archives of Canada. This led to his position as the first ever photograph conservator at the National Gallery and was then followed by his role as chief conservator. John has published extensively on the effects of display, travel, mounting, and light exposure on photographic media. His special interest is with daguerreotype photographs. Currently, John accepts private commissions and continues to pursue his research interests and various writing projects based out of the National Gallery of Canada Library and Archives. John has contributed to a number of publications and catalogs, such as The Extended Moment, 50 Years of Photography at the National Gallery of Canada, written this year, and earlier publications such as Photographs of the Past Process and Preservation, and 19th Century British Photographs from the National Gallery of Canada. John offers his perspective tonight on the art of conservation. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Conservation is the hidden art behind the extended life of many of our most valued historic and cultural objects. You developed a specialty early on, preserving and restoring photographs, becoming very highly acclaimed in your field. Can you tell us about your life as a conservator of photography and what inspired you to follow this path?
Well, actually, as I decided to get involved in being a conservator, working in museums, I wasn't entirely certain what my specialty was going to be. At the time, I was working at the McCord Museum in Montreal, and the McCord has long had a wonderful collection of Native Canadian artifacts, clothing mostly. At the time, this was many years ago, it was called the Ethnographic Collection. It wouldn't be called that anymore. And I was fascinated with this material and fascinated by its materiality. And I rather thought that that might end up being my specialization of working with natural materials, skin, bone, and natural plant materials that were used to make these First Nations objects. But I was also drawn to pictorial art and particularly photography. The McCord Museum also had a tremendous collection of photographs in the form of the Notman Photographic Archives. I didn't really work directly with that collection, but I was fascinated by seeing it. The way that I ended up going towards photography is after I started at Queen's in the artifact stream, I had an opportunity to see what was going on in the paper conservation lab and the paper conservators that were being trained there, and listen to the lectures about paper conservation, and I really decided that I was more drawn towards that than I made my decision to go in that direction. Also, of course, based on the fact that I had studied photography at Concordia University and had a Bachelor of Fine Arts in photography. So I had a technical background and an art background in photography as well.
You also have a science degree, which combined with fine arts gave you a different approach to conserving photographs. How did that contribute to your development and interests?
Well, all conservators need to have some kind of familiarity with some kind of scientific approach to looking at problems. Usually there's a requirement to have first-year chemistry as a prerequisite for going into one of the graduate programs in conservation, partly because it is good for a conservator to have some familiarity with chemical terminology, the terminology of chemistry, and some of the basic concepts about how atoms and molecules interact, because that's ultimately what we're trying to intervene in preserving objects of cultural heritage. But also having a little bit of science in your background has given you an introduction to the scientific method, to looking at problems through an evidence-based approach. In addition to that, photography ends up being a highly chemical phenomena. And to understand how photographs, especially photographs of the silver halide era, which is now over, how photographs come into being, it's best to have a pretty sophisticated chemical background in chemistry. And so that's also one of the factors that I suppose drew me towards photography, is that it was this highly elaborated chemical technology that I had the basic tools to understand because I had a background in biochemistry.
photographs dating back to the beginnings of photographic images can obviously be quite fragile. So can you tell us how your approach to conserving older photographs and an example of the tools and processes behind a project that you found quite rewarding?
Yes, well, I would first say about talking about photographs from the dawn of photography being quite fragile, perhaps in some ways, in some isolated examples, have dramatically deteriorated. But on the whole, I would say photographs have survived remarkably well for the past 160 years if they were stored correctly or stored wisely, stored in a way that their custodians are obviously caring about their longevity. And that leads me to say that the way of making sure that photographs get preserved is by keeping them in the kind of environment that leads to their longevity. And that kind of environment is, it's essentially the kind of environment that humans would want for themselves and for their own comfort. Environments that are not too dry, not too humid, and not particularly not too hot. And also, photographs benefit hugely by being enclosed and away from free access to the air, unlike humans. If photographs are stored in good quality enclosures and then put into environments that are temperate, moderate, and don't fluctuate a lot, they tend to last for a very long time. The conservator usually is tasked with doing something about a photograph if it has not been treated well. And with these very early photographs that you mentioned earlier, the daguerreotype, those have suffered either greatly or moderately if they've been mishandled or if their small cases that they're enclosed in have broken. And the first job that I was given when I came to the National Gallery of Canada was to improve the housing of a group of daguerreotypes that had been recently given to the institution and that were going to form the substance of the first exhibition of photographs to be put on display in what was then the new building of the National Gallery of Canada. This was 1988. So the curators selected 105 daguerreotypes from this collection that had been donated to the gallery. And I worked my way through conserving each one of those. I didn't do anything particularly dramatic to the daguerreotype plates, but I did make sure that cases that the daguerreotypes came in were clean, presentable, that the glass that covered the daguerreotype plate was not itself not deteriorating. If it was, I replaced that glass. I made sure that there was a good adhesive seal around the edge of the package, so that air couldn't get inside and tarnish the surface of the daguerreotype. I just made those cases look like they were not brand new, but intact. And so when we put them on display, the display of the case itself was as much for something to for visitors coming to the exhibition to appreciate as the daguerreotype images.
There's many exciting photographic exhibitions being held, such as the National Art Gallery and Canada's Photography Institute. One in particular that's on view at the moment is the artist-photographer Oscar Rylander's work. Are you involved in this exhibit and any of the writing of the catalogs or essays?
No, I'm not, because I'm now retired from my formal role in the conservation department at the National Gallery of Canada. So that exhibition was... Well, it's being planned by the curatorial staff for many years. Lori Pauli, who is the principal curator of the exhibition, has worked on Oscar Rylander for last 5 years. And of course, Lori and I talked about her project as she was developing it. But no, I didn't have anything to do with preparing those particular works for exhibition. The one exception to that thing is that Oscar Rylander is perhaps best known for a composite photograph that he made, perhaps at the behest of Prince Albert, Queen Victoria's consort. The title of this very ambitious photograph is called The Two Ways of Life. And it's a highly moralistic sort of parable in pictures that posits that youth has a choice to go either in the moral direction or in the immoral direction. And the photograph provides various examples of what the moral and the immoral life look like. So as you can imagine, this is not something that can just be simply set up in a studio and photographed, especially using 19th century technology. So what Rylander did was carefully plan, as a matter of fact, as many as 36 different vignettes, if you will, which he photographed separately, and then using some extremely sophisticated and creative darkroom printing techniques, he brought 36 different negatives together to make a single print, and the print image forms a seamless image. This is like a master class performance of printmaking, and it's not entirely clear exactly how Oscar Rylander managed all this, but he did leave some writings about the specific processes that he used to make this a combination print, and I've done some research on what he wrote about it and what other people have written about how Rylander made the two ways of life, and myself and the current conservator of photographs at the National Gallery of Canada, Christophe Vichy, we did a little video that is present in the exhibition. For those that are interested, they can watch us explaining and showing how Rylander would make a combination print of that complexity.
Very interesting. You obviously have a passion for photography and the process and the techniques that photographers have employed, especially in the daguerreotypes. Have you written a particular publication that also examined Rylander's and other photographers' work, such as the Extended Moment, the 50 Years of Photography at the Gallery?
Yes, you've mentioned the processes, essays, and the Extended Moment. The book called Photographs of the Past, the principal author of which is a good friend of mine in France, Bertrand Lavadrine, he invited me to get involved. He wrote this book in French about 20 years ago, and he invited me to get involved in the translation of that. And really what happened was, in translating the book from French to English, we really sort of updated and transformed the book from its purpose as a tool to be used in Europe and mostly in France to one that was more generally relevant to North American readership. And he very kindly, due to my contributions to the updated version of the book, named me as an author. So Photographs of the Past, Processes and Preservation is an important landmark in my career as a technical writer. And there have been some other publications along the way. My particular research specialty, I'm interested in what happened to photographic printmaking, that is, positive images on paper in the 1850s. There was, of course, Henry Fox Talbot, who invented the positive-negative process, photography on paper, and the way he described to make prints was how prints were made for the first, say, 10 years of photography in Britain and in Europe and eventually in the United States. But as time went on towards the end of the 1840s and through the 1850s, new ideas were developed about the best ways of making a print on paper from a negative. And, of course, new ways of making negatives were coming along at the same time. Was a period of tremendous flux in the technology of photography. And a tremendous amount was written about what the best ways of doing things were. And a lot of very small but critical variations in printmaking processes were developed and written about and shared. This has all ended up with a situation where we in the 21st century, when we're presented with photographic print made during the 1850s, they're often very difficult to identify. And my research has been focused on trying to learn from what was written about photographic printmaking at the time, trying to learn what the variations were and what the most common ways and what the signals are that tell us that particular materials were used to make a print. I started to, this is sort of my overarching research interest, I started to write about that subject in an essay that was published, actually, again, in Laurie Pauli's catalog published by the National Gallery of Canada, 19th Century British Photographs. So I wrote an essay in that catalog talking about my appreciation of how photographic printmaking technology changed during that early period. And I have more to write about it, and I hope to eventually write a small technical book on that subject.
Well, we look forward to your upcoming books, and I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your perspective and your research interests with us and insight to the art of conservation.
You're very welcome. Pleasure.
That was John McElhone, renowned freelance photograph conservator, speaking with us from Ottawa. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is Anne Rallison, teacher, artist, and vice president of the board of directors for Martha Street Studio here in Winnipeg. Martha Street Studio was incorporated in 1988 as Manitoba Printmakers Association Incorporated, a not-for-profit, artist-run center that preserves and advances the print arts. For over 30 years, Martha Street Studio has been a significant contributor to Winnipeg's cultural landscape, increasing the awareness of printmaking through production, education, exhibitions, and sales of emerging and established artists' printmaking. The association has a strong vision to provide unparalleled, accessible printmaking facilities and education in the print arts. Their mandate is advanced with a strong value system, encouraging a high standard of innovative excellence in printmaking through advancing artist techniques, education and community engagement in an inclusive environment, welcoming communities and artists from many disciplines to its facilities. They successfully engage and connect communities through their programs and exhibitions, continually enhancing interest and insight to printmaking artists and their practices. Here to tell us more about this innovative artist-run center is Anne Rallison. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Martha Street Studio members and board have a strong innovative vision with an interesting history of over 30 years as a recognized significant contributor to Winnipeg's cultural landscape through its production, education, exhibition, and sales of emerging and established artist print arts. Can you tell us about Martha Street Studio's history and vision?
Oh, my goodness, it's quite a long history. I've been involved with it on and off for a number of years. I started there as a printmaker myself, and now I'm one of the instructors. And I also feel it's important to do one's community service bit, so I'm on the board of directors. I think one of the things I've found so exciting about the place is that it is one of the best printmaking studios in all of Canada. I've been to a couple of others, and they're so small. Martha Street welcomes all manner of people as printmakers and artists, and it's so interesting and exciting to sometimes be down in the studio with people who are doing dry point, and some other people are doing screen printing, and sometimes you're down there by yourself.
Yeah.
It's really a wonderful place to be. In fact, there was a time when I had an unfortunate period in my life when I couldn't be there, and I remember returning and standing at the top of the stairs and taking a big sniff and just bursting into tears, and somebody said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Oh, I'm home now. I'm home." It's a very wonderful, special place for me on many levels.
So as an artist yourself, how does the artist-run gallery advance and contribute to an artist's career?
Oh, it's great that so many young artists get the opportunity to display their work in the Youth Outreach Program, which is a wonderful program for young people. They can take the Youth Outreach Program and then they can go on to Incubator, and they always have the opportunity to show their work. The other exciting thing is that we have artists from all over the country, not only in Canada, but some people from the United States as well, are able to put forward applications to show their work. So the work that is exhibited is very, very diverse.
That is quite unusual, and it's very different from a commercial gallery and what they offer, isn't it?
Oh, yes, very much so.
And Martha Street Studio offers the artistic community such extensive facilities and equipment, including the specialized digital suite and a significant gallery venue to support increasing awareness of those artists that you've mentioned and the exhibition of their works. Can you elaborate on the advantage of these facilities and the exhibition space?
Yes, certainly. Well, one of my experiences has been I was an art teacher in the school system for many years, and as young people would leave and want to go on to art school, maybe, I had encouraged a number of young people to go through the program. And then one or two of them have gone on to take art degrees in places like NASCAD and Emily Carr. And they started at Martha Street. So the advancement for them has just been wonderful and very exciting. And for other artists, I had a friend from Paris who came and did a residency in the studio. And she was amazed at how friendly and the space. She couldn't believe the space. And the exhibitions change frequently. And they sort of launch people, which is very positive for the arts community.
Definitely is. And can you tell us about an exhibition that you've been involved in, either with your work or that you found really exciting, and what the experience has been like for you and those artists?
I'm often involved in the group shows with the members, and that's very exciting because, as I said, there's a number of artists who are involved in Martha Street. So it's the opportunity to see all the diverse printmaking techniques that everybody's involved with. I particularly was fascinated by a mezzo tint exhibition from a young man last year. His work was incredible. It was so detailed. He kind of used some sort of fantasy images, and I just found the technique that he did a little talk about the technique. I found it fascinating. It was a very wonderful show.
What is the mezzo tint, and how does that process unfold?
Well, it's an etching technique whereby you have a copper plate, usually copper, and you have this sort of, it's almost like it's called a rocker. So it creates this almost like sandpaper effect all over the copper. But I haven't done it myself. I have to admit, I haven't got the patience for that kind of stuff. It's very, very detailed. And then once you've got this sort of sandpapery effect over the copper, you then sort of draw and scrape into the copper before you etch it. There is another artist at the studio who's on the board as well called Ted Howarth. He's an expert at mezzo tint, but I have to admit, I'm not.
What is your area of expertise?
I wouldn't say I was an expert at very much. I've just enjoyed so much learning screen printing. There's the most wonderful young man there who teaches advanced screen printing. His name is Andrew Lodwick. He's on staff. So I've enjoyed doing screen printing. I've enjoyed etching. I really like collographs. So I suppose maybe that would be my expertise, if anything.
And what is collograph?
A collograph is when you take something like mat board and you build up a collage from all manner of things like porridge oats or screwed up tissue paper or torn up mat board or bits of masking tape, even going out into picking up bits of moss and lichen, and you would stick that onto the board and then shellac it, seal it all in, and then you ink it up. Different areas give you different textures and colors once you've inked it all up. So you get a very textual piece of work. I suppose it's like an inked up collage piece would be the best way of describing it.
And where did you learn that? Was there somebody that inspired you in that particular technique?
Yes. When I was in England, I found the work of a woman called Sarah Ross Thompson, who is actually located in Scotland now. And I met her, and I did a short course with her in Scotland a couple of years ago. And we communicate internationally via Facebook and emails. And I learned from her, and then I've been teaching it a bit at Martha Street, so it's all, but it's a continuing learning experience. I mean, I firmly believe that to be an effective teacher, you have to keep on learning.
Absolutely. And you've been recognized and honored as one of the best art teachers in Canada, as well as an accomplished artist. Can you tell us about some of the programs that they offer at Martha Street and how you've been able to incorporate those into your teaching program?
Martha Street offers courses all year, except for in the summer, and different artists will teach dry point, some teach digital sweet work, some people teach screen printing. So there's a variety of work that you can learn right from September right through to June. Myself, I've been teaching what they call a sampler pack, so a little bit of this and a little bit of that to get to whet people's appetite, I suppose, to then go on and take other courses at the studio. And for myself, when I was teaching in the school system, when I found that I was learning something new, I then wanted to take it to my students and try it out with them. And I have to admit that I probably one of the most fun times was to bring a whole pile of grades, I think it was 25 grade 6 students, and we made collographs for the Year of the Sheep, I think it was, a few years ago. That was lots of fun.
How would you recommend an emerging or established artist get involved with Studio?
Well, they have an extremely good website that tells you all manner of things that are going on, and courses, lectures, exhibitions. So that's a good place to start. And the other thing is show up. Just turn up and get involved. Sort of come say, well, can you show me what you do here? Because there's always somebody there who can show you around. And then I would suggest that they take a course. You don't have to have lots and lots of experience because it's very much a hands-on classes, which is wonderful. So I would suggest show up, take a class.
Do they coordinate anything with the fine arts program at University of Manitoba?
Not very much, actually, no. There are a few connections with regard to some sort of advice on materials and equipment, but I think Martha Street is pretty independent from the university, actually.
And they also have an artist residency exchange program with Century 3 Print and Media Arts program in Hamilton, Ontario. Can you tell us a little more about this program and the artists that are involved this year?
Each year that we have somebody, that people will apply and we look at their work, and then somebody will come to, we had a young woman from Montreal last year who was doing a lot of work with etching and combining different media, etching and some silk screen together. And then often these artists in residence will give sort of weekend courses, and they always have an exhibition at the end of their work. And then we will send somebody to their studio. So it's definitely an exchange. So they might come here for a few months, and then we will send somebody there for a few months.
With your background as an artist and teacher, does that inform your advice to the organization as a board member? And what have you found most rewarding about the results of your contributions?
Just the feeling of being involved, Susan, really. Just, I'm an artist and printmaker, but to know more about what's going on in the place, being involved in the decision-making about events that are happening and promoting new artists and new ideas. So I feel it's a privilege to be extra involved, as it were, and being on the board.
Are there many volunteers that help with the exhibitions? And
oh, yes, we have quite a number of volunteers. In fact, I believe Christian's got quite the list of volunteers, which is lovely. And they do everything from sorting out all the papers and the inks to prepping some materials for classes. And then in exchange, they get some time in the studio for themselves.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate you sharing your insight and advice with us.
It's been very nice to talk to you.
Thank you. That was Anne Rawlson, teacher, artist, and vice president of the board of directors for Martha Street Studio here in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.